Hello and welcome to more Press X Catch-Up. I'm going to get right into it. This is the latest episode on which we talk about genres that indie games served, kind of self-explanatory, and in the back half we talk about Focus Home Entertainment. But this was before some of those revelations with, I can't remember the name of the company, Frog Games or something like that, where they didn't exactly treat them especially well. But still, their sort of philosophy on what they do and the games they push and the pocket of the games market they're sitting, there's still a lot of things there that are still true, regardless of how they've behaved after recording this little bit. So I'll check back in at the back end and enjoy the show. Hello, I'm Rob.
Hello, I'm Rob.
Welcome to another Press X. This time, quite a simple concept. Genres which indie games served.
Yeah.
I don't really need to over-explain that, so I'm just going to jump straight in with my pick, which is a survival horror. I don't want to say saved, because it's too early to speak, I think, on that, but we'll get to that. Basically, the problem with survival horror is the AAA studios got hold of it. So, we're talking about Dead Space 3, I think it was Resident Evil 6, and games like that. Games where basically they were fundamentally survival horror, but they'd been mainstreamized, where they were putting in multiplayer for no reason. They made them action games.
Yeah, I was about to say.
And any
Resident
idea
Evil
of
6.
Them being survival or horror. Was dead. They'd been killed.
That's what I mean. Resident Evil 5 and 6, neither of them were traditional Resident Evil games. Both of them were very much action shooters.
And Silent Hill went that way as well, before Konami totally lost interest in it.
Which is a shame, because I think Silent Hill is one of those franchises where they could really do some interesting work.
I don't know whether it was in the game or the demo, but that sequence in which you are basically killed by a bunch of knife-wielding babies is one of my most.
That is actually the demo of Silent Hill that you got.
But even
Metal
so,
Gear
that,
Solid.
That sequence is possibly the one which stands out to me most in my entire history of playing games because it's horrible. It's horrible.
But that's the thing. That was the demo of Silent Hill that you got with Metal Gear Solid when you bought Metal Gear Solid, if I remember rightly. And that demo had two modes. You had the exploration mode where you could basically explore around the hospital or the school or whatever it was, and then you had like a horde mode where you just attacked by all these waves of these ghost zombie babies wielding massive knives.
Yeah, so they were killed off, basically, because they weren't profitable enough. Selling 4 million units isn't profitable enough, so they were basically put in the pile alongside skateboarding games of genres that people aren't interested in.
Yeah. I mean, my main issue with survival horror games, especially indie ones, is that something like Five Nights at Freddy's technically classes as survival horror, indie survival horror.
Well, I was talking about Outlast and stuff like that.
Is Outlast a...
I'm not a fan of Outlast, because Outlast is basically dark, quiet, bang, boo.
Yeah.
And it's exhausting because of that. But it did get people playing it on streams. It did get eyes on the genre, which I haven't been in it a long time. It did get... I mean, there's other titles besides that, but that was sort of the beacon, really, wasn't it?
Yeah. But, I mean, you had horror games that were very different to the usual survival type horror games coming out from indie studios. They were more narratively driven. I suppose if you're talking about survival horror games in the indie sense, then what was that other one? The one with the baby in the cellar is top down indie.
Binding of Isaac.
Yeah, The Binding of Isaac is technically a survival horror game.
Yeah, I mean, it's like Super Smash TV, but yeah.
You know?
Survivally and horror-y.
Yeah, it is survivally and horror-y. But I think it's horror rather than survival horror. I'd say that in the indie genre has had a hand in saving. Sorry, the
indie I wouldn't say saving, yes, because it seems like the only company in a big scale that even remotely comes close to believing in it is Capcom. But Capcom have released two of the best survival horror games probably ever. I mean, one definitely is. I'd say the Resident Evil 2 remake is possibly the greatest survival horror game ever made.
Yeah.
Top three, anyway.
Yeah.
So Capcom definitely believe it. So I don't think it's saved just yet, but I believe it's very, very near. It just needs other companies to sort of pick on it. I mean, I know there's the Blair Witch game that's coming out through an Xbox studio. That's a start.
Yeah.
But it's nearly there. It just needs a studio or two to glom onto it.
Yeah. But what about games like Soma?
What about them?
Or Amnesia?
They're different though, aren't they, really?
You understand what I mean by what I'm saying?
Well, I suppose Alien Isolation as well with Sega, but yeah, still.
You know, they weren't the typical Alien Isolation was more of a AAA title than Amnesia or Soma, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And that's my point. Soma and Amnesia aren't really indie games per se, but they're a lot more indie than Alien Isolation.
Hmm. It's like that Hellblade, Senua's... it was called.
Sacrifice.
That was survival horror as well. Yeah. At least it used the visual language of the survival horror.
Layers of Fear was very much a horror game.
Yeah, and you go to EGX, you go to any sort of conference which has a lot of indie developers, and you will find a ton of horror games.
Yeah, I mean, Layers of Fear was very much an indie horror game through and through. It was surprising because I mean, for a lot of these games, you will find on Steam, sometimes on Early Access, sometimes not. But you'll probably find that there are a lot more horror and survival horror games on Steam that you might actually enjoy than you might think. It's bizarre when you think about it because you've got games like Detention. You know, was it Taiwanese?
Yeah, it's a Taiwanese. I have that. I've yet to play it. It's supposed to be excellent.
Yeah, but Detention was... It's kind of a survival horror, I suppose.
No, it's definitely a survival horror. But it's using the history of Taiwan, but displacing it through monsters and the grotesque.
Yeah.
But I think the big sort of, for me, the confirmation that horror games are back would be the legit return of Silent Hill. Yeah. Like a new Silent Hill game. If that happened, I think survival horror is back where it needs to be. But it's like, I'd say two-thirds of the way through a revival. Not quite there yet, but indie games are pretty much solely responsible for making them even remotely viable again.
Yeah. I do want to specify one thing. We are making a very big distinction between survival and survival horror.
You definitely are, but I'm just sort of lumping them all together.
Well, no, because survival and survival horror are two very different things. You know, if you've got an open-world survival game, that just means survive. It means learn how to catch fish, kill some animals, build a hut, make a fire, and protect yourself from the environment.
So things like The Long Dark and Don't Starve.
Basically, yeah.
Which kind of horror, anyway.
Yeah, the horrific part. The horrific part comes from fear of the unknown. There's that new one coming out, Green Hell, is it? Where you're trapped in, say, the Amazon jungle, and so there's tribes around, there's snakes and mosquitoes and insects and crocodiles and jaguars and everything like that. And so you have to forage for food, you have to make weapons, you have to build a shelter and stuff like that. You have to protect yourself from the environment. The reason why you feel it's horrific is because of the tension from being in an unknown environment.
Okay. So that's enough of that. Let's move on to another genre which indie games save. What's your pick?
Well, indie games have definitely, definitely, definitely saved subgenres of RPGs, right?
That's pretty vague.
Well, subgenres of RPGs, when you look at your typical RPG, you've got certain distinct types. You've got the Japanese type RPG, the JRPG, which a lot of them are still turn-based and everything like that, but then you've got the crossovers with kind of the bridges between East and West, the Final Fantasy games and stuff like that.
For me, I think JRPGs died.
JRPGs haven't died.
They've died in the sense of the big ones all have become this sort of action thing.
I don't know what planet you're living on.
Well, you know, like the old style RPG where it's turn-based and it's very strategy-based, but now it's basically like Final Fantasy 15, a lot of them.
Again, I don't know what planet you're living on.
I've played them, Rob. Don't condescend to me on bloody recording.
I am going to condescend because you haven't played The Legend of Heroes, Trails of Cold Steel, or Trails in the Sky, which is just as big as Final Fantasy, if not bigger. It tells one continuous story arc throughout all of the games in the Legend of Heroes franchise, and is turn-based, and a very, very proper dyed-in-the-wool JRPG. Complete without
what
many
he did
characters.
There, listeners, what he's did there, listeners and viewers, he's basically slapped his RPG sausage on the butcher's table.
Yes, I have. I've slapped all of it on the butcher's table. Anyway, leaving that to one side, because you do have that, the Square Enix games, they're basically designed to appeal to as much of an audience as possible. Whereas the Falcon games and your Atlas games and games like that, I mean, Persona is very much a JRPG.
Oh, yeah, in a traditional sense.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So those games are very much targeted at fans of those types of games. Whereas Square Enix games, the Final Fantasy games, they're aimed at as many people as possible, whether Eastern or Western. Doesn't matter.
And they're not really into RPG fans anymore, either. Yeah.
Then you've got your Western RPGs, so stuff like The Witcher, stuff like, Bound by Flame, and, you know, those sorts of games, where Dragon's Dogma Darker Risen to a degree as well, but those sorts of games where it's very much the type of RPG that we know in the West as an RPG. You know, the stuff that's based on D&D and stuff like that, or
Diablo, Baldur's Gate, stuff like that.
Yeah, the kind of isometric RPGs or the third-person perspective RPGs where you're in an open world going around with a big sword hitting things in the face. So, there are subgenres of those RPGs. Roguelikes, tactical RPG, first-person perspective, right? And by that I mean stuff like the old-school Eye of the Beholder. Now, indie games have very much kept those subgenres of RPGs alive. And I, for one, am very thankful to indie games for certain types of game that they've brought out. I mean, you know I'm a big fan of Moonlighter. You know that little indie game?
I never played it, but yeah.
It's basically a roguelike procedurally generated dungeon crawler where you run a little shop in a small village and you have to try and revive the village by exploring the dungeon. You can't die in it. Top game, right? Loads of fun. I had lots of fun playing the game. But I've been playing this new game, which is developed by Dead Mage and published by 11-Bit Studios. I've got a review for it out, so have a watch of that, because I'll go into more detail. It's called Children of Morta, and it's basically what happens if you take the formula from Moonlighter and you build on it, and you build a story, a family, an actual quest. You build a world on this entire basis of procedurally generated roguelike dungeons, and you can't die. You just progressively get stronger and stronger and stronger, but the challenges you face also become more and more difficult. And I absolutely adore Children of Morta because it drip feeds the story to you in ways, and that's one of the things I think indie devs do so well, is relaying the story, the narrative to the player in a way that is, you know, in a way that the player doesn't feel like they're having to force the storyline. They're not having to. And the great thing about indie developed subgenres of RPG is that there is very little in the way of filler. There's very little in the way of side quests and stuff like that. Generally, this is what you have to do. Crack on with it.
I mean, look at Undertale. That'd never happen. Exactly. That should never have happened, but it did, and it was massive.
Yeah, exactly. And then you've got, you've got loads of indie games that have become huge successes, just because they've taken this whole idea of, the RPG and just done it in its simplest form.
Yeah, cause it kind of became like open world games having the big RPGs. Yeah. They're trying to appeal to as many people as possible.
Yeah. I mean, tactical RPGs, Felseal Arbiter's Mark is one of the latest tactical RPGs I've played on the PC. Again, got a review of it, so have a watch of that.
Are you just hyping things that you've reviewed?
No.
Yeah, not under you.
Look, all I'm saying is that if I had to compare Felseal with something like Final Fantasy Tactics or Tactics Ogre or something like that, another tactical RPG made by published by a big name publisher, right? Felseal actually holds up, okay? And I'm talking about in terms of the narrative, in terms of the actual combat mechanics, in terms of the structure of the game itself. it actually holds up against stuff that's coming out from, that came out from the big boys. So there are ways that the indie devs in the RPG subgenre can actually, you know, fight and hold the ground against the big developers and the big publishers. And that's something that I absolutely love.
Is there any other sort of smaller genres you want to draw attention to?
Well, I mean,
because there is for me, you mean, shoot 'em ups, shmups.
Yeah.
Which is the spaceship-based ones, or the ones where you are a character going from the left of the screen to the right of the screen.
Yeah. But
one is good. The shoot-em-up of ships is being good, I think.
Yeah.
But the one where a character goes from left and the right has become basically like the indie open world. Yeah. It's become so prominent.
Yeah.
That they're all basically the same thing. Exactly. I mean, I know that one from Devolver looks good. My friend Pedro looks great. But generally speaking, I do love... what was it called? Guns, Gore and Canioli. Yeah, I love them too, but generally speaking, it's a genre which is much too bloated, but by being bloated, it has been saved.
Yeah. For me, I like that, but for me, I think one of the genres that was basically kept alive by it, because it would have been a dead genre. I'm quite literally a dead genre if it wasn't for indie games, is point-and-click adventures.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Big studios have long since lost faith in them.
Yeah. But point-and-click adventures, the only reason that they managed to survive is because of indie devs, and indie devs who basically put out point-and-click adventure games, I love you.
I think the last... Generally, it was PlayStation 1. Like, was there a big thing? PlayStation 2, they just vanished, didn't they?
Yeah. They just died of death. The irony is, it's when open worlds started becoming the big thing, is when point-and-click adventures basically all but died.
Because, you could debate that Telltale did save them, but I don't think that's the same thing.
Telltale didn't save them. Telltale just said, look, we're still here, right? We're still alive.
Compare like Telltale to any of the classics, and I don't think Telltale stands a chance in hell at really standing up against them.
Well, the first season of The Walking Dead is still one of the best, but you know,
it's a game which is overshadowed by its ending twist.
Yeah, exactly. But it was still a very well structured game.
Yeah, I guess.
But yeah, see, I know people will say stuff like real time strategy games and stuff like that, but they never really went out of fashion. It's just
they were never in fashion. They just had their little corner, which is very popular.
That's what I was about to say. Quite literally, you took the words right out of my mouth. They never really went out of fashion because they were never in fashion. They're just in a niche over there.
Yeah, there's specialist clubs over in the corner there.
interesting genre of games that was repopularized by indie games, especially mobile, was Tower Defense.
Hmm. Yeah.
It's basically an RTS, but it's kind of a RTS light, isn't it?
Yes, basically.
So, yeah. But yeah, I mean, there are several subgenres and sub-subgenres and variations on genres that have been saved by indie developers.
Dungeon crawlers is another RPG subgenre.
Yeah, dungeon crawler. Like I said, that's why I generalized it and said subgenres of RPGs. Because a lot of them have been saved. But let me put it this way. If it wasn't for indie games, right, then just about every single RPG that wasn't a JRPG would basically be a clone of The Witcher.
I wouldn't say Witcher. I'd say Skyrim.
Oh, yeah, Skyrim. Sorry, yeah. You are exactly right. Basically a clone.
Witcher was the exception to the rule. Witcher was basically said, why are you all doing that? We're over here. We're much better.
Yeah, Skyrim. You are absolutely bang on correct, right? But that's my point. If it wasn't for indie devs, that's what would have happened.
Yeah, which was a horrifying thought.
Yeah, and also a great point to end the episode.
Yes, it is. If you like that, comment below with your opinions and your thoughts and your suggestions for genres that could have been saved or have been saved. But don't forget to click that subscribe and that notification bell. And until next time here on PressX, thanks for watching.
Unsure if your Spider-Man is amazing or spectacular? Infinitely confused by Crisis on Infinite Earths. Or does the mere thought of X-Men continuity make you tremble? Then 4Panel is the podcast for you. Join me, Andrew, and my co-host Robin Mick as we guide you through the weird and wild world of comics. We'll talk about the secret origins of your favourite characters, delve into the craziest events of comics past, and review the hottest new graphic novels that you might have missed. That's 4Panel, a part of the Geek Show Podcast Network, available wherever podcasts are found.
My name is Quentin Flynn. I'm here on The Geek Show. Why? Because I play Raiden in the Metal Gear series. I am Lightning, the Rain Transformed, and I have been transformed by hanging out on this show. So tune in and turn on. You'll love it. The Geek Show. It rocks.
Perplexed by the pompous, ponderous piffle purveyed by normal art critics? Well, you've come to the right place, because we're not normal. We take a not-so-serious look at the serious worlds of art and literature. Join Sarah, Andrew, Rob and Graham for a piffle-free journey through the cultural landscape of the 21st century. Literary loitering. Because you can't make a cultural omelette without smashing a few eggheads.
Hi, I'm Rob.
And I'm Rob as well.
And today we're talking about Focus Home Interactive, or Focus Home Entertainment. It is actually Focus Home Interactive, as far as I'm aware, but I think at one point they were called Focus Home Entertainment.
They just Focus Home.
Yeah.
That's it.
Let's just Focus Home. Which sounds wrong now that I say that out loud. Focus Home Interactive, I'm going to say it like that. FHI. Anyway.
Focus Home. I think that was Demon Seed.
We don't
talk about that. Horror reference for the win, yeah?
We don't talk about that. Anyway, Focus Home Interactive, they're a French indie video game publisher and developer. They started in 1996.
They're as old as that, wow.
Yeah, and one of their very first games that they released was Cycling Manager on PC in 2001.
Cycling Manager. But the reason we bring this up, it's effectively off the back of A Plague Tale, which is possibly the biggest announcement of arrival I've seen in a very, very long time.
Well, on the back of A Plague Tale, they've got three more big names coming out. Greedfall, The Surge
which
2.
Which I have been playing in the beer review with a link up in the top corner now.
Yeah, The Surge 2 and World War Z.
Yeah, the first time I was really aware of them was with The Surge.
Was it The Surge or was it Technomancer?
No, Technomancer. Technomancer is from a company with the coolest, well, a developer with the coolest name in the world. Spiders. So all their games are made by spiders, which is just such a cool way to sort of phrase who you are.
Yeah.
And what you're doing. And which was, it's a great concept with kind of funky gameplay loops.
Yeah.
It was like a great sort of statement of intent.
See, I was aware of Focus Home Interactive a lot earlier than you, because I became aware of them because of a game called Chaos League back in 2003. It was developed by Cyanide Studios and it was basically a game like Blood Bowl, and that's how I became aware of Focus Home Interactive. But I didn't really pay much attention to the actual publisher or the developer at the time, because you didn't really need to. It was 2003, and so Focus Home.
Back then, there was more publishers than you could ever hope to actually have.
Exactly. And Focus Home mainly did stuff like Cycling Manager and Virtual Skipper and Trackmania, Fire Department, Pro Rugby Manager, City Life, you know, stuff like that. These were all kind of simulation games. And then in 2008, they took a left turn and did Dracula Origin, right? And then Sherlock Holmes games started making an appearance. But this was in amongst all of the sports management games, the Cycling Manager, the Rugby Manager, and stuff like that. But then they released, like, the city-building game, Cities. And that was, I think, one of the big sellers for them, because it was like SimCity, but it wasn't. And then I think one of the big coups for them was releasing Divinity 2.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I mean. They were a developer which...
Well, publisher.
They were just another indie developer. I mean, what they fundamentally do, they're a publisher. Sorry, they're a publisher who give chances to companies, like, some really small independent companies to sort of release something under their umbrella to have their sort of reach as a marketing thing.
Yeah.
And as outlet. There's many companies like that though, yeah. But this is one of the bigger scale ones.
Yeah. One of the interesting things is that Cyanide Studio, after making Chaos League, went on to actually make a Blood Bowl game. The Chaos Edition of Blood Bowl was made by them. And they did other things, the Game of Thrones games in 2012, I think it was. But really, their Focus Home really started knocking it out of the park. I think it was around 2014, 2015, when they did like Sherlock Holmes Crimes and Punishment. And they had Styx, the first Styx game came out, which was when they really started focusing in on pushing certain types of games, certain types of genres, especially for the
thing
PC.
Is, you know who they remind me of?
Who they remind you of?
Ubisoft.
Yeah.
The connotations of what that means now in today's world, Ubisoft, microtransactions.
You're talking about the early days of Ubisoft, aren't you?
Yeah, but Ubisoft, pre-current incarnation, were quite just a medium-sized business.
Yeah. Who actually experimented a lot with the games that they were publishing and the games that they were developing themselves.
The era I'm thinking of is around about the time when they were releasing sort of Beyond Good and Evil. They were very medium-sized. They didn't rock the boat, but they were putting out a wave of really interesting games which nobody else would even consider putting out. And Focus Home Interactive, or Entertainment, or whatever they're called, that is basically what they are now. They're that medium-sized company. Not rocking the boat, but they are doing something which nobody else would ever, ever dare to do. And I know they do lots of stuff. I know the Surge does look good. I really like the Surge. It's one out of all of the Dark Souls quotation marks rip-offs. That's probably one of my favourites because it's cyberpunk and just nasty. It's really cool.
Yeah.
But that and A Plague Tale, that's kind of like a bring it on gesture if ever I've seen it.
Well, I mean, other games that weren't as big bring on gestures, but were actually received very, very well by the people who played them. Stuff like Farming Simulator.
That's a bit different.
Yeah, it's a completely left field game, but you know how many people love those games?
No, actually, I don't.
A lot. A hell of a lot. And then you had all the Warhammer games, because Warhammer is a massive franchise, isn't it?
As a tabletop, yeah, but not so much in the video game.
No, but that's the thing. The tabletop players play the video games. And so
makes sense,
It's the same with like the D&D players. They will play the D&D related video games like Baldur's Gate and stuff like that. So with Focus Home having certain franchises, like Mordheim and Space Hulk and stuff like that, that basically allows them to attract a much more diverse range of potential customers.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to go into the sort of the business approach of it because that's kind of dull, but I think a similar sort of company is Deep Silver as well.
Yeah, well, Koch Media, Deep Silver, yeah.
These companies, which are not majorly big, but they're solid in the middle.
Well,
a term which is, well, an industry aspect which is completely gone, which we'll talk about in a greater, more precise way in a future video, but AA games, these are the studios which do AA games.
Yeah. Here's the thing, right? The last 3 years, since 2016, these are the games that have been published, just published, by Focus Home Interactive. So you have Battlefleet Gothic Armada, which was a space simulation combat type thing, Farming Simulator 17, Seasons After Fall, which I think we reviewed, it's that indie platform game where you play the role of a little fox, and it was kind of like Ori and the Blind Forest, I suppose.
Yeah, I remember it, yeah. I reviewed that one.
Yeah, Space Hulk Deathwing, first-person shooter based on the Warhammer franchise, The Technomancer, which you reviewed, Shinest the Lightning Kingdom, Shinest the Lightning Kingdom, however you want to call it, Styx, Shards of Darkness, The Surge, Call of Cthulhu, the official video game, The Council, Farming Simulator 19, Fear the Wolves, Insurgency Sandstorm, Vampyr, you know that one that just came out earlier this year?
Well, it wasn't this year, but it was recently.
Oh, sorry, late last year, sorry. Yeah, it was late last year. Plague Tale Innocence, Greedfall, The Surge 2, and The Surge 2 is coming out at the end of this month. I think it's the 27th. And World War Z.
That's
that's a really wide range. I mean, that's a diversity in their gaming catalogue, isn't it?
Yeah, which is also, it's counter to like current gaming trends. Current gaming trends is put all of your chips, use the gambling analogy, is putting all of your chips on one number.
Yeah, all your eggs in one basket, that sort of thing.
Yeah. Whereas if this was a gambling, I think Focus Home Entertainment just puts a little bit on everything.
Yeah, but this is the thing. They win more than they lose.
Mm-hmm.
Because
so the question in a video like this is, it's called The Rise and Rise of Focus Home Entertainment, so where does the future lead? What's next?
See, that's
do you thing. Think, anyway?
That's the thing. It's difficult to say because Focus Home have traditionally been a company that keeps its cards close to its chest. You've gone with the gambling analogy.
I don't mean predicting what's going to be released. I mean just what sort of company it's going to be in the future.
I really hope they take the lessons of Ubisoft and don't go down the route of Ubisoft.
Because they've kind of become one of the big public enemies as far as gamers go, haven't they?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at games like Greedfall looks really interesting as a game, all right? You have Tricon hats and fantasy kind of crossing over. It is a bizarre setting for a game, but I can see it working really well. And then you have The Surge 2, which is basically The Surge plus more snap-on items and more darkness and more of everything that made The Surge an interesting game.
Yeah, The Surge is genuinely underrated, I think. Really, really is.
And, you know, you have Call of Cthulhu, which came out recently. You have World War Z, which is coming out soon, which I've seen interesting things about World War Z, especially about the Horde mode and stuff like that. So
the thing is, though, what I want, I don't want Focus Home Interactive to change.
Yeah,
I mean, sure, the quality of the games could be a bit more consistent, but that's completely besides the fact. It's just a company which will do stuff, will release stuff, which nobody else will give the time of day.
Yeah.
I mean, just looking at the most recent things, who would give a chance to a game like Greedfall, a fantasy RPG in which it's sort of set around the time of the colonization of America?
Yeah.
Or who would give time to a game of something in the French Revolution and the Revolutionary era, where you would run around from rats as a little girl and her little brother?
I thought it was earlier than the French Revolution. It was before then. It was more medieval times.
It doesn't matter when it was. I'm just using it.
It was the time of the Black Plague, which was earlier.
Yeah. I mean, Black Plague era. Yeah. Stuff like. What the point is, though? Yeah. A game set in the Black Plague.
Yeah.
Who would do that? Who gives that a chance?
The same company that does a simulation about farming with big machinery.
Yeah, I mean, they've become one of the unsung heroes, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, I know they're not going to win any Game of the Year awards, but they're the sort of games company who make gaming worth it, because you can have all your big sort of tentpole things that everybody talks about, but it's like going back to the PlayStation 2 era. The PlayStation 2 was so good because there was games from all over the places and all over, different styles and different genres and whatever, all over the place. And that's the mantra which Focus Home Interactive or Entertainment are playing by, and that is good for games, I think. And yeah.
Can I just...
Long may their continue rise.
Can I just... Yeah. Can I just end this with one thing, right? And I just want to throw this out there. Having played and reviewed the Farming Simulator games, right, I can tell you they are surprisingly good and addictive games. So if you decide to try one, be prepared to lose a few hours. The other aspect, because we did mention they did a lot of the Cycling Manager type games and stuff like that, and I've also played those and reviewed those, and they're a lot more addictive in the way that only sports management games can be addictive.
Yeah.
And you know, because of games like LMA Manager and stuff like that, how much time did you lose, Rob, to LMA Manager?
I don't think I could put a number to it, but let's just say thousands of hours.
Yeah. Well, Cycling Manager, Pro Cycling Manager and Tour de France 2018, I kind of lost a lot of hours to. It's not that the games were particularly graphically good or that the gameplay was really challenging. It's just there's something about those sorts of games that will hook you and keep you. And I don't know what it is. Somebody out there who does psychology could probably examine it and explain it to me.
Yeah, but on that point, I think it's a good that place to end. If you have anything to add, do comment below. Otherwise, do smush that like button and click the subscribe. And thanks for watching.
And thanks for listening to another episode of the Geek Show's exclusive video game podcast turned video series, Press X. If you enjoyed that and have anything to add to any either conversation, please do seek us out on social media. Search for the Geek Show on Instagram or TGS_ on Twitter. And if you enjoyed it, there's other ways to sort of get involved or show your appreciation, really. Head over to your podcast provider of choice, give us a rating, give us a review. It helps with exposure and it helps people find us. And a world as dense and as populated as podcasts, every little helps. So yeah, it means a lot to little independent outlets like us that don't have a big name behind us either as a celebrity or as just a network. Many networks out there in podcasting. So thank you very much for listening. On one of these final episodes of Press X before the name goes through and it relaunches, rebrands as something else. So I have been Rob, and the other Rob was also here. We'll see you next time. Thanks for listening.